on this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
But then as our kids start to get older, and the catalyst can be anything from, you know, getting a driver's license, shopping for that prom dress, or getting your kids ready for college or university. It's those catalysts that tend to make women stop and think, well, wait a second, I'm not mom like that anymore. And then we start to realize that there's all these things that we haven't been thinking about, haven't been listening to. And it can be a really scary place to hit this point in your life and go, well, who am I?
Stay tuned following the interview for On the Couch and Off the Rocker, our special guest's psychosilly analysis by Art Lab's own head cabbager, Dr. Ima Freudknot.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome back to another great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab on an episode we call, and what is it that we call it? You heard it in the intro, bottom of the barrel. The psychology of dark nights of the soul, and we're going to talk with our own Lucy Q about being broke to broken to back on top again, starting your day by starting your own engine. If life's a roller coaster, what's the secret to enjoying the ride? Is that even possible? And secrets to going from bottom of the barrel of life to becoming a barrel rider of life itself, getting on top of it. From those dark times in the barrel, Lucy created a unique journaling practice called MyFab5, which she still uses daily, 4 years later. Her personal growth journey opened her mind to a world of possibility. She believes in the philosophy of each one teach one, remembering how lost and lonely she, F-word alert coming up, she felt, and decided to start the Roller Coaster Podcast to let others know they're not alone, while also providing tools and resources to begin their own journey of growth. To continue the conversation from her podcast, she launched Nexture Growth Network to connect coaches with seekers of growth, wisdom, and authenticity. Transcending personal crisis fueled Lucy's desire to connect with and empower other women. She fuels this passion as host of the Roller Coaster Podcast, a daily podcast with over 200 episodes. Wow, that's a lot of work. Heading up the Nexture Growth Network, she founded, which is a revolutionary platform for personal growth and development. Lucy lives in Nova Scotia with her husband, Jeff, with whom she has two adult sons, Liam and Ethan. Lucy, welcome to the show today. I've been so excited to have you because probably, gosh, from my early days in practice, also being a theology major and studying a little bit about St. John of the Cross, I've been talking to people about the dark night of the soul, and I just saw that you, this is one of your areas of expertise. But to get started off, to let folks know what's possible and where they can get to, can you share with us, with all you have going on, what's an average day in the life of Lucy? What's your morning routine? How do you get started?
Stay in the stands at the end of the interview, T-Ballers, and witness our special guest slug a bite-sized brain ball with your name all over it, clean out of the art lab.
My morning routine has really become somewhat sacred for me, and it was born from the darkest day in my life. It was in those moments where I had the opportunity to either look down and continue to drown in my own misery or find a way to lift myself up. And in those moments is when I did something that was sort of not typical of me and I'd never done before. I basically called out to the universe, God, higher power, whatever you want to call it. And I was just, please, just give me one thing to think about, to pull myself out of this tailspin. And it was at that moment that I began to look at not who I was today, but a vision of my future self. And that was the true essence of where I developed my journaling program. And that day, I started off by writing just 5 simple bullet points about who that person, the future person, was. And over time, I've morphed it into a rather unique journaling practice. So I start all of my days pretty much the same way. I get up. I'm of British heritage, so I always start my day with a good old cup of tea. And then I go into my, I call it my office, but it's where I work. It's where I do all of my practice. It's my little zone. And I do the same practice that I have done every day for the past 5 years. I write out my finished, my fab statements as they are now. I have a sort of a gratitude mantra passage that I write out. And then I do another page of just free journaling. And that's where I do that, you know, vomiting on a page, whatever's in my head, I get out. Sometimes I explore different questions, or if I'm really challenged by something, that's where I have the opportunity to dig in and understand what I'm thinking and feeling. And after I go through my journaling practice, that's when I've blended in things like meditation, yoga, I exercise. And then that way, the rest of my day, I've already taken care of me first. I've started by filling my own cup first. So then I have what I need for whatever the rest of the day brings me.
Wow, that's awesome. I have a bit of a off-the-cuff question that just came to mind, and that is, but what if you're really struggling? Do you do it anyway? The things that get in the way? Do you always do it, or do you let yourself get off track?
Pretty much no. Sure, I miss a day here or there. You know, if we're traveling and I have to get up early for a flight, or if we do a lot of road trips. So, you know, if I'm not in a convenient place to do it, then I don't. But I'm going to say 95% of the time to 98% of the time, I journal.
Do you ever still get depressed? Do you ever still get depressed?
Yeah.
But you still, but do you still do your routine? You're depressed, but you still do your routine.
That's when you need it the most.
Oh, wow. Thank you for that. What if you didn't sleep well? Do you still get up and do your routine?
I'm a menopausal woman. Sleep is a constant issue. Hell yeah.
But what if you went to bed, and maybe you have the perfect relationship, we'll get into that, but what if you just went to bed and you had an argument with your spouse, or an argument with one of these wonderful sons, Liam and Ethan, do you still get up the next day and do your routine?
Yeah.
Now, guys, the reason I keep asking Lucy this, and Lucy and I did not pre-rehearse this. Lucy and I have actually never met. We just talked over chat and through emails and all that, and she just seemed like such a lovely person, and this interview is confirming that. But the point I want to make is this, is that she established a healthy routine, a pattern, and then she does it no matter what. And if you want one thing, one little rung of the ladder out of the bottom of that barrel, I would recommend doing that. As some of you have heard me talk, when I've had tragedy in my life, such as when my dad was killed, the one thing I didn't do was stop doing the things I was doing. I'll say that again because it sounds confusing. The one thing I did not do was I did not stop doing the healthy things I was doing, and it made all the difference. Do you find that the episodes of sadness or depression or, heck, I don't know, anxiety or whatever, that just life in general is made easier if you just keep your routine, keep that pattern going?
Absolutely. And here's the thing. I love to ride a roller coaster. I love roller coasters. The bigger, the twistier, the turns, going upside down, I love them. But when you ride an actual real roller coaster, you can see the twists coming, you can see the drops, and you know it's going to end. But when it's happening in real life, you don't know. You don't know how long you're going to be going down that hill or going up and gripping on with fear. You don't know. And what my morning practice has given me is that it's given me that hope that it will change. And I recently saw, it was funny, it was on a TV show, and in the background, there was an easel with the word hope written on it. And I thought its acronym was bang on, because hope, they had written down as hold on, pain ends.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's what ultimately this whole process has taught me, is that, yeah, absolutely, I get depressed. I have bad days. I get bouts of insomnia, and I only sleep 10 hours in 5 days. You know, I go through all of that. But the difference compared to where I was, you know, 5 years ago at the bottom of the barrel, is that I have and understand hope, and I know that it's only temporary and it will change.
And I love that. Hold on, pain ends. Now, as much as I love that, I'm going to play devil's advocate, because I'm going to use that personally. I really, really will. Except, here's the way I look at the whole thing of discomfort, which I try not to use the P word. It's a dirty word, you know, P-A-I-N. I had a friend in high school would say pain hurts. But I try to replace that with the word discomfort. And I try to replace other things I don't like with the word non-preferred. There's a big difference in this is a catastrophe and this is just something I don't like. And the brain pays attention to programming. We program with words. But here's the thing that I found in my private practice, is that if all a person is doing is sitting around waiting for the pain to end, they're actually going to prolong it. And what I recommend to people is let the pain do what it's doing, because I don't think we have direct control of that. Focus on finding meaning and purpose in the moment. And I think that, Lucy, you find meaning and purpose in your morning routine. I think that's fantastic. And I do too. When I'm doing my 3 mile run, I really do try not to look at when it's going to be over. I found that looking at the timer, which I do have a timer, actually seems to make it last longer. Whereas if during my run, I will focus on thoughts and plans and goals and aspirations and just thinking about my thinking, then I don't know. It seems like the discomfort goes away. And the way I teach people, I talk a lot about hopelessness. People will say I'm hopeless. Well, that's a bit of fortune telling paired with catastrophizing. In other words, I can look into the future, which none of us can, and I can see the absence of anything getting better. Now, guys, if you're really good at that, looking into the future, as I've made this deal before, come over. I will put you in my 2004 F-250 that belonged to my dad. We'll drive to the casino. And since you can tell the future, we will win millions. But the fact is, no one ever takes me up on it. It's very sad, because no one can tell the future, which is why we should stop it. We should cut it out. We should realize I don't know that my future will have the absence of things that I desire. That's fortune-telling and catastrophizing. Well, I wanted to get to this, and this is why I asked you about your morning routine. You have a wonderful morning routine, but here's my question. How does that morning routine differ from your morning routine way back when you were at the bottom of that shiitake barrel? Lucy, hey, guys, before the show, Lucy is so polite. She's so courteous. She's such a northerner from Nova Scotia. She's so polite that she asked me what word she could use, and people rarely do that. They just hurl them out there, and we had to bleep some of them out. But she asked me if she could use that four-letter shiitake word, and I said, sure, yeah. But I thought that was neat. But how does your morning now differ from that, the bottom of that, as you call it, Lucy's word, shit barrel, way back then?
Well, I think, you know, my day started like everybody else's, to a buzz, a beep, something telling me I had to get my day going. And that's when you get out of bed, and, you know, I still had kids that I had to take care of. So, you know, my thoughts were always on other people to begin with. It was getting my kids ready for school. It's getting myself ready for work. It was all these other things that had nothing to do with me. And I think when you start your day that way, you're already starting off with an empty tank. compared to now, I'm putting my day with me first. So I'm starting with the day with my day with my tank full. Big difference.
Wow. Yeah, I think that there's lots of folks out there like that. The mornings are just catch as catch can. But do you have to get up earlier to pull that off?
I used to, but because right now I'm working, everything that I do is on the side. I still have a day job, but I work from home now. So I do have flexibility in my schedule. But yes, for a period of time, I would get up earlier, that half hour, 40 minutes earlier, and start my day. Sure, setting your alarm for 5 a.m. some days so you can get out of bed and journal can be a bit of a pain in the butt. But, you know, I really began to cherish that time of morning, the quiet before anyone else was open. It was really my time to start to think about those things that we never really give ourselves time to think about. You know, who am I? What do I want? What am I thinking? What am I feeling? You know, what do I need to work through? So those morning times, sure, at the beginning, it's like anytime you start a new habit, it's hard. It's challenges. You're stepping out of that comfort zone, but then you create a new comfort zone. So for me, getting up in the morning, that's a new comfort zone for me. So it's easy now.
I really identify with that, because if my floor was made of grass, there would be a pathway worn away of the same steps I take every single day. It is just so repetitive. And I'll tell you guys that there's really no freedom quite like it, that I don't have to get up and wonder, what am I going to do? And you might say, well, what about all the phone calls and the texts and the emails? And yeah, I have lots and lots and lots of those, and I try my best to get to those, but that's not at the top of my priority list. If there's a fire, well, I'm not a moron. I would grab the fire extinguisher. But I really, in my life, have become very, very good at deciding what is a fire, what is a five-alarm fire or a one-alarm fire, or not even a fire, period. And I would refer you guys, by the way, not that Lucy and I talked about this, but the Eisenhower Matrix. The Eisenhower Matrix has been around for quite some time. You'll find it in Stephen Covey's book, The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. And it's basically, there are things that are in quadrant one, upper left, urgent and important. And then there are things in quadrant two, upper right, which are not urgent, but they are important. There are things in the lower left quadrant, let me see if I get this right, that are urgent, but they're not important. That's quadrant three. And then there are things in quadrant four, lower right, which are neither urgent nor important. And I find that pathology comes when everything's in quadrant one. We get to thinking everything is urgent and everything's important. Well, quadrant one, I call the firefighting quadrant. And the more of your life, like Lucy has done, that you can move to quadrant two, is her morning routine urgent? No, it's not a fire, but it is important. And so quadrant one should be minimized by maximizing quadrant two, but also trying to, you can't really eliminate it, but really, really super, super minimizing quadrants three and four. And quadrant four, by the way, I call the soap opera quadrant. I guess these days we call it the housewives or whatever quadrant, because that type of TV show, no offense to the TV show, I know lots of folks love it, my wife loves it, but it's just not urgent and it's not important. I'm sorry, no offense to anybody, it's just not. I'll sit there and I don't really watch it, I just kind of sit there like a zombie, because I get to sit with my wife and do it. But what's important is sitting there with my wife, which is a quadrant two activity. But the TV playing with Housewives of Wherever, Housewives of Nova Scotia, is a quadrant for activity. Sorry, guys, it just is. Well, tell us a little bit more. Let's go deeper into your dark night of the soul at the bottom of that barrel. And how dark did it really get for you, Lucy?
Pretty much as dark as it gets. I hit a point of complete desperation. You know, we often talk about fight or flight. And I had those feelings of flight. I just wanted to run away from everything that I was, everything that I had created, all of my problems. And running away meant ending my life. And, you know, I don't know if it was a few seconds or a few minutes that I was in that, but I guess that's where the fight came out, was because I knew that if I chose to end things for myself, I'd only be passing my problems on to my husband and my sons. And, you know, that wouldn't solve anything. My pain would go away, but theirs would be, you know, tenfold. And that's where, you know, I started to make these decisions that really have changed my life, completely changed my life.
Wow. What were some of the key decisions you made?
That's when I asked the universe for help.
Oh, wow.
And it's sure, I was raised going to church on Sundays. You know, we kind of said grace at dinner time, but religion and church was something you did on Sundays. It wasn't really, you know, anything outside of that. So for me to do that was very out of character. But when I look back now, there are a lot of things that happened that day that I do wonder who was in the driver's seat.
Really? In what way?
You know, just as I said that, the first thing that popped into my head is a Carrie Underwood song, Jesus Take the Wheel.
Oh, wow. Love that song.
Yeah. So if you think about it, you know, when we do have those moments of true surrender, you are giving yourself over to something higher. And when, you know, and I look at everything that was born from that moment, somehow I had this inner wisdom that guided me to keep making the next right step. You know,
you think that your early raising and your exposure to a life of faith had a lot to do with that?
No.
No.
No, not at all. Because at the time, and I'm not a church person. I'm not a religion person, but I'm a highly spiritual person.
What's the difference?
Because God and the divine and eternal love, and it's not held in a building. That's held in each of us every single day. And that's an opportunity for us. And I think religion causes a lot of confusion. It has its own rules. It has its own, you know, my husband was raised in the Roman Catholic Church. He went to Catholic school. Some of the priests that taught him are now in prison.
Oh, boy.
I was in an Anglican church where things are, you know, England created the Anglican church so they could, you know, King Henry could get divorced.
King Henry, so, I think, wanted to marry somebody different.
Religion never made sense to me because, you know, even if you look at it, you know, God-fearing, judgment, all of these things I saw going on in church just didn't speak to me of how, you know, how God and religion and spirituality really should be. We don't need to subscribe to any particular religion or any sort of thought patterns to find our own God. I think that's something that's truly unique to one of us, and it's something that we all have the power to do.
Did that start with you at that moment of thinking of taking your life? Did that come later? At what point did you begin that renewed search for spirituality?
It started that day.
That day.
And it's been unfolding. because the whole spiritual path, you know, when it comes to, and whether you, you know, you engage in prayer, you speak to angels, guides, any force greater than us here as humans on this planet, you know, however that relates to you, that's what matters. Not what somebody else is telling you to say and do, not what prayer you say, not how many times you go to church, and if you follow Lent. Those are all, you know, those are all tools that people use. But really, it's about what's inside of you and that inner wisdom and that inner intuition and that trusting.
But let me play devil's advocate, and I truly say that.
That's no just pun intended.
No pun intended, yeah. But no offense to anybody. But what I mean by that is that I'm challenging what Luce is saying to help elicit some more information for you guys. And myself, I'm truly interested in this. You said, you use a term, that's what really matters. Going back a step, you said, that's what really matters. Why does this stuff really matter? And in what way did it matter to you? What difference did that make to you?
It's where I found my true self. You know, so much of our lives are spent in the outer world. You know, we're preconditioned right from the time we're born. We're told what to do, how to do it. School does the same thing. It tells us what to think, what boxes to check. I mean, you look at most people and they hit their midlife and they're looking back going, whoa, wait a second. I checked all the boxes. You know, I went to college. I got married. I had my two kids. I got the dog. I got the minivan. I take the vacations and I'm not happy.
And that was you.
That's hundreds of thousands of people out there. I talk to women every day that are going, what happened? I ticked all the boxes. Why aren't I happy? Well, there's so much about our society that they don't want you to be happy. They want you to be product. They want you to be producers. They want you to feed their machine. And they don't care if you know who you really are, if you're doing what you really want to do, if you're living your purpose. That's not how our society works.
I wonder why not.
Because we don't have the balance. We're still sort of stuck in a very patriarchal society. And there's so many of the, and when I talk about, you know, patriarchal societies or feminine or masculine energy, I'm not talking about gender. We all have feminine energy and masculine energies within us. But there's so much about our feminine energies that have been stripped away.
Can you be more specific? What would that, can you put maybe a finer edge on that?
You know, spirituality.
Okay.
Sure, there's religion. But, you know, take, for example, children. We ask kids what they want to be when they grow up. But how many times do we laugh and say, oh, yeah, yeah.
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
The Therapy Bites podcast is HIPAA compliant. No identifying patient information will be disclosed by Therapy Bites podcast hosts or Therapy Bites podcast guests without permission from patients or guardians. All personal stories are de-identified in order to comply with HIPAA, the NASW Code of Ethics, and the Ethical Principles of Psychologists and Code of Conduct. Fresh from the therapy couch and from the deep dark recesses, stories may involve exploding preconceived notions and topics uncomfortable to underthinkers and small farm animals. Audience discretion and duct taping your head for safety is advised. Concrete-headed Kool-Aid drinking humans assume all risks associated with any possibility of choking to death on the accurate, realistic thoughts presented in the art lab. This is natural selection, and Therapy Bites podcast management and hosts are not responsible.
Welcome to the Therapy Bites Art Lab Library, where we have pored over thousands of volumes to bring you the latest Couch Crumbs quilt. Oh, would you like a napkin? You're getting crumbs in the book.
That okay. Me eat book.
Oh. And now today's Couch Crumbs quote.
The next season, the next full moon, the next sunset, the next sunrise, the next songbird, the next butterfly, the next smile, the next breath. There's always something good coming. Just remember that.
Oh, you got crumbs on the couch. Extra points for you.
Live the art life. Become a T-Ball teammate inner circle supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/therapybites.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Get a real drink. My oldest son, from the time he was a toddler, loved movies. And we knew one day he was going to be involved in the film industry. All through school, his teacher would say, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And he would say, "I'm going to make movies." And you know what they would tell him? You need to have a better idea.
Would
You're
they
never
really?
Going to
the
make.
Teachers, the teachers would say this?
Teachers, absolutely.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And we just said, you know, don't worry. They don't know. You can do what you want. What's the kid doing? He's 24. He's got several short films. He went to business schools to take marketing so he can involve marketing in the film industry. But we're not told to live our purpose, live our passion. They don't do that in school. They want to make sure that you've done your math, you've done your sciences, and you've done your history.
Yeah.
They don't care if you're happy. They don't care if you're doing what lights you up every day. That's stripped away.
Well, it's a bit of a potato chip factory. And I say that because, you know, we think we have to have a certain program to produce the same size, same weight, the same imprint of potato chips so that they all fit nicely in a vacuum-packed bag. But I do think what we leave out of school is finding meaning and purpose in things and attributing value to things and being individuals. And I like to tell kids and sometimes even adults that you can do anything you want. You can do movies, you can do podcasting, you can do psychology, you can do, well, my son wants to do ear, nose, and throat medical work, be a otolaryngologist. I always have trouble pronouncing that. I remind myself there's a golly G in otolaryngologist. It's a weird word. I just say ENT. But you can do anything you want, but the best thing to be is yourself.
Yes.
You can do anything you want, but the best thing to be is yourself. And I think the reason, you know, I guess there could be a song. There was a song, Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. But I would say there could be a song, Looking for Happiness in All the Wrong Places, because happiness is really not a pot of gold you find at the end of the rainbow. Happiness is a lifelong thing that is an average of life that can only be discovered at the end of life. It'd be like asking you, when you get to be 120, what has been the average of your bank account? You'd say, gosh, I don't know. I'd have to wait to get to be 120. I teach people the same with happiness. Happiness is not pleasure. Happiness is not joy. That's a different thing. I teach folks happiness cannot be found or lost in a single moment. That's not happiness. That can be pleasure or joy, but happiness is a bigger, grander, greater thing, and it's the average of your life. And happiness is best discovered at the end of your life when you've lived a life of meaning and purpose by finding value in things. Would you say that how old were you, Lucy, when you had the bottom of the barrel experience?
44.
Wow, 44. Gosh.
I'm going to be
Lucy right now looks like she's about 33. So she must going to have this in the
future. I was given some good genes.
Yeah.
I do. Well,
you still look like a teenager, actually.
I was going to say, admittedly, being, you know, a redhead with really fair skin, we really can't hang out in the sunshine too long.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the whole sun thing.
That kind
well,
of
you were 44, but do you think at 44 that, I mean, what impact did that have? Do you not finding meaning in things and value in things? And there's a song I referred to by Pink Floyd, Just Another Brick in the Wall. You're just another brick in the wall. And of course, the early on MTV video was a bunch of kids, faceless kids, falling off into a meat grinder. It was fairly graphic. But not recommending kids in meat grinders, by the way. But it was a psychological thing. But do you think that you just didn't find meaning or purpose in what you're doing in your life?
I think for me, you know, a lot of people would label it a midlife crisis.
Oh.
And, you know, one of the things I've been able to learn more about is how many, and I can only speak to women, mothers, those are the people I talk to, but how many midlife moms are going through that very thing. And part of that happens because, you know, I grew up in the 80s. Many midlife women today went from being daughters to wives to mothers in a very short period of time. I met my husband when I was 18, 19. He's 5 years older. Shortly afterwards, we moved in. Then we got married. A few years later, we had kids. And I never really had that time to learn who I was. And when you become a mother, you know, many of us, we put everything that we have into our families. And there's nothing wrong with that. That is our purpose, our passion at the time. But then as our kids start to get older, and the catalyst can be anything from, you know, getting a driver's license, shopping for that prom dress, or getting your kids ready for college or university. It's those catalysts that tend to make women stop and think, whoa, wait a second. I'm not mom like that anymore. And then we start to realize that there's all these things that we haven't been thinking about, haven't been listening to. And it can be a really scary place to hit this point in your life and go, well, who am I? What do I really want? And for me, that's what started to drive me down, not only because I had those questions, but because I had an incredible amount of guilt that went with it. Because I was asking these questions at the same time. I was thinking, well, what's wrong with you? You have a loving husband. You have a great family. You have two great kids. You've got a house. You have all of these things. So on top of all of these questions, you know, just for good measure, I laid on some good old shame and guilt and name, whatever else you want. You know, it's no wonder I hit rock bottom. And it's what midlife women are going through. And it's happening more and more. I think by the year, I'm going to say the year 2025, we're going to have over a billion women worldwide going through menopause.
Holy moly, what a statistic.
And the thing is, and talk about patriarchal society, this is where it comes out when it comes to the midlife woman, is today, midlife, menopause, has been stripped down to a list of symptoms that women either have to be cured from or endure. It's completely void of something really amazing and beautiful that happened to so many women at midlife. And that's exactly what I went through. It's that spiritual transformation. And that's been stripped away. And, you know, even the medical world for several years abandoned the midlife woman by stripping away hormone therapy. And, you know, that led to all other sort of medical problems that we could do another whole episode about.
Well, why was that, by the way? I'm out of the loop. Why was that? I just take care from the eardrums up. I'm a brain guy.
Well, and it is a brain issue because hormones are essential to everything that who we are, what we do. Uh-huh. And it was stripped away because I believe it was sort of an obscure test or study that was done that somebody found that there was a potential higher risk of women on hormone therapy developing, I think it's uterine cancer, ovarian cancer, and breast cancer.
Oh, we thought it increased risk for that.
What they thought. So rather than explore it further, they went, oh, wait a second, let's take this all away. But when you sort of take away all of those essential hormones that we need every day, that's when you started seeing the rise in things like heart disease and Alzheimer's for women. Women, two-thirds of Alzheimer's patients are women.
Wow.
Yeah. So all of these things are going on. I mean, it's no wonder, you know, it's no wonder today's midlife woman is feeling this way. I mean, we were raised in the 80s. We were told we can have our careers and have our families. And then we were expected to have it all. You know, we were raised with shows like Growing Pains and Family Ties, where the women would go have all these high-powered careers and come home and have these fabulous family dinners and all of this stuff. That set the bar really high for us 80s girls. And then it's no wonder we sort of get to this point in our life where, you know, we're still managing our children, whether they're, you know, going through high school, going through college and starting their lives. And a lot of us are also taking care of our parents. So you have all of these, I mean, talk about a perfect storm. You add on to that things like, you know, your drop in hormones, you know, insomnia, all of these weird questions that are going on, the spiritual evolution. I mean, talk about chaos, absolute chaos.
Well, absolutely. And I want to thank Lucy, guys, for calling me out on that and correcting me, because she's absolutely right that there is a unified existence of body, brain, and mind. And yes, if hormones are out of whack, that most definitely impairs cognitive processing. And it's a huge problem that in the medical field, make everything physiological and effect, and forget the effect it has on the brain and its functioning and us being able to live optimal lives. So thank you for that. Now, what were some of those early steps that you took? At what point did you get into designing this morning routine that you have after that bottom of the barrel episode where you thought about taking your life?
Well, I meet those five statements about who I was and what I wanted. And I kept writing those out. And over time, you know, they're different things. We've all heard about things like affirmations. And it's funny because in your episode 34, Noah St. James talked about how affirmations don't actually work, because sure, you can sit there and say, I have $1 million, but meanwhile you're laughing because you're like, not according to my bank account. So, I realized that I needed, you know, call it guiding beliefs, whatever it was. So I wrote those five statements about my future self in the form of an affirmation. But just like Noah had pinpointed that affirmations don't work, I found a different way. And this was long before I ever knew who Noah St. James was. I tied it into my why. And if you've ever seen Simon Sinek speak about the power of why, you're going to understand. So my five statements now encompass see it, feel it, be it, because I see my future self and I feel how it's going to feel to be that person because I've incorporated my why. Why is this important to me? And be it. Well, that's when I get to recognize what I'm doing every single day that supports that statement and makes it true.
Now, on that last point, just real quick, how do you do that? How do you do that last part, be it? Can you give some examples?
Absolutely. So my first statement is I have a strong and healthy body and I am living a long, fulfilling life. And while I'm writing that out every day, I'm thinking about, sure, I could sit there and say, oh, well, you had two glasses of wine last night, or what about that bowl of ice cream? But I don't. I sit there and I remember, yeah, you had your green smoothie and you worked out for 30 minutes and you meditated and you did all of these things. So sure, it's a vision of my future self. but I'm already that person. And I think that's the difference between, you know, your traditional affirmation and what I'm working with, is because I've tied it to my why. And every day I'm proving myself right.
And on the why, what are some of your whys?
You know, in my first one about strong and healthy body, I am living a long, fulfilling life. I don't want to be that old woman crippled with arthritis that can't get up and do something. I don't want to be void of my memory, my mind. I don't want to be that person. That's not how I see my aging coming to. So what's my vision? What's my why? Well, it's to live a long, fulfilling life. It's to be healthy and to be strong. No, I'm not sitting there saying I want to weigh 120 pounds.
In other words, you're picking something that's achievable, that's realistic.
It's a feeling. It's like, I have a strong and healthy body. Am I a size 6? No, I'm a plus size girl. But, you know, talk about finding the silver lining in anything. The other day, I went out my front porch and I didn't have on the best shoes and it had been raining. And my feet went straight out from under me. It was one of those times that I wish I had one of those cameras, because it would have been hilarious. Like, talk about viral. And I went down
really hard. Was it icy? Was it because it was icy?
No, it was just wet. Oh. No, it was wet and I had stupid shoes on.
Oh, stupid shoes.
Like they were like slit. Like, they didn't have any grip. They were kind of crappy flip-flops. And out I went. And I landed hard.
Oh.
And sure, the entire right side of my backside was purple.
Oh.
But I laughed. I laughed because I said, if I was a skinny girl, I would have cracked my tailbone or broken my pelvis.
Did you start laughing automatically, or did that come after the initial shock wore off?
After a few choice adult words.
Oh, okay.
Then yeah, I started laughing. It was bad. And I mean, like, literally, I was... when my husband first saw it, he nearly wet himself laughing, but he was also shocked. But
oh,
I mean,
my.
And that's the thing, is that I have a strong and healthy body. I took a fall that some people would have ended up in hospital or with a broken bone.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of my curves, you know, I had a little bit of bounce in my trunk and, you know, I was okay.
There's always
it's how you look at it.
Yeah,
there's how you look
really,
at it.
We really, really sculpt our reality every single moment. And back to your original point, how we're going to live in the future is being designed by us right now, how we're thinking in the right now, the choices we're making in the right now. So, guys, let's not complain about it 10 years from now, because where we are 10 years from now, gosh, 95% of that's going to be because of what we chose today.
And I go back all the time to that woman at 44 in that moment of desperation. I always go back to her. And I realize, if I had told her where I would be today, she wouldn't have believed me. So I am already the future vision of myself than I was 4 years, 5 years ago.
In other words,
I've already become that person.
To put a psychological spin on it, cognitive science-wise, Lucy at 44 was having distorted thinking about her future, and her future self, which is now her present self, is now proving her wrong. All those thoughts she had, those catastrophizing thoughts that created disgust in her brain about herself when she was thinking about suicide, she has now proven that those thoughts were, well, distorted thoughts. What are some current hurdles that you still face? What are some current difficulties that you still struggle with? Because life's never perfect for anybody.
Oh, no. And you know what? I think the one that's going to catch just about everybody, no matter what level you achieve, is you're always going to run into some form of limiting belief. And, you know, that's something I'm working through now. My podcast now, I'm getting, by April, I'm going to have 300 episodes out.
Wow.
I published a guided journal on Amazon, Your Journaling Journey. I did all of those things. 2 years ago, that probably would have scared the pants off me, but I did it. But now I'm, you know, now I'm embarking on a new journey about actually creating a self-guided program for women to take them through the process that I went through to help myself, so that they can craft their own journaling formula. Am I running into limiting beliefs? Yes, absolutely. I'm a human being just like everybody else. Did I get butterflies in my stomach before I hit the link to join you today, Dr. Heath? Absolutely. I'm a human being like everybody else. You know, I'm a talker, but you always have these feelings that come up, and it doesn't make a difference who you are or what you achieve in your life. You're always going to come up against that. But again, that comes back to your choice. Are you going to see it as a threat, as a fear, and let it hold you back? Or are you just going to say, okay, well, I've done it before.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it again. And it's not always knowing the how. And that's a big thing, is we get so caught up in the how.
Well, the how kind of will work itself out.
How is our journey.
Uh-huh.
And that's the part, you know, we're always so focused on the destination that we forget that life is lived on our path to get there.
Life,
the how
is
not up for us to know.
Life is lived on our path to get there. That's fantastic. Life is lived on our path to get there. Wow. Real quick, Lucy, coming on to the close episode here, review with us, remind us, Lucy Q's My Fab Five. What are the My Fab Five once again?
Those are my five statements that I write on every day that are a combination of my affirmations tied to my why. That is the way I start my journaling practice every single day.
And they can be different for everybody.
Yes. And that's part of what I'm going to help people guide, is to understand what you want to have for you. And once you have them, they're probably not going to change, because whether it's today or tomorrow, I'm still going to want a healthy body. I'm still going to want to have a strong and healthy body. That's not going to change. So, you know, I write the same things every day, because I'm still looking forward to who I want to be, because we can always be a better version of ourselves. But I'm also remembering everything that I've done to be that person today.
Yeah, I stopped competing with others a long time ago. I was a former bodybuilder competitor, just kind of an amateur guy, a powerlifter, and I was very competitive academically. And then at some point, I just decided the biggest competitor I have is myself. And I just want to make sure that I have, moved the needle just a little bit from where I was yesterday. Well, guys, we've talked about so many wonderful things here, broke to broken to back on top, starting your day by starting your own engine, life's a roller coaster, which Lucy loves, but what's the secret to, and that's enjoying the ride, finding value in it. And she shared some of the My Fab Five secrets from going from bottom of the barrel to a barrel rider in life. Lucy, a couple more things to go here. What would you say would be your favorite secret barrel rider hack? And by the way, I was planning this episode, and in the background was playing The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey. And in The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, The Desolation of Smaug, actually. It was the first one. The dragon called Bilbo a barrel rider, and that just kind of, I was playing the episode on this bottom of the barrel, and I thought, gosh, Lucy is a real-life Bilbo-esque barrel rider. She's not in the barrel. She's riding the barrel. So what would be your top barrel riding hack for our listeners?
T-ballers, time to quit your lollygagging. Get out of the dugout, onto the field, and live the art life.
Is to start your journaling practice. Yes, it's hard. Staring at a blank page is hard, but there's tools and resources out there. That's why I created my guided journal, was because staring at a blank page, whether you want to draw a picture or write down a sentence, it's hard. But I can't even begin to describe how your life will change when you start your day by putting yourself first.
Yeah, and guys, I'd recommend make an appointment. Pick a day, pick a time, show up for the appointment, sit there, appoint yourself, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes, whatever happens, happens. Make an appointment, show up for the appointment. You guys can get more from our very own list of Q. You go to www.nectregrowth.com, and that is spelled N-E-C-T-U-R-E, growth, G-R-O-W-T-H.com. And we have one last thing to go before we let Lucy go today. And I'm going to go deep under the dark recesses of the therapy couch, and I'm going to pull up Lucy's very own deep dark recesses therapy couch question for this episode and spring this honor.
We journey now with Doc Heath as he submerges with our special guest into the depths beneath the dark recesses of the therapy couch.
And here's Lucy's question. Okay, envision this. You're in a deep, dark dream on a deep, dark night of a deep, dark theme. And that theme is you're once again back at the bottom of the barrel again. But this time, there's a famous person from history with you who is also at the bottom of that barrel. It can be anybody, alive or dead. Who is that person? And what might you say to help them out of that barrel? What might be the first thing that you tell them to help them get out of that deep, dark barrel?
You know, it's weird because as soon as you said what person, the name that popped into my head was Sylvia Brown.
Oh.
I don't know if you're familiar with Sylvia Brown.
I am.
But she was one of the first sort of intuitive people that I started following way back when she was on the Montel show. And I really liked her practical approach to things. And she does focus more on spirituality than she does religion. As for what I would say to her, I say, hold on, girl. I know how to get us out of this one.
Wow. Hold on. And I think that's great advice for everybody. If you're at the bottom of the barrel, I think being at the bottom of the barrel is, and I know they say this about a lot of states, but being at the bottom barrel is like the weather in Arkansas. If you don't like it, hang around, it'll change. If you don't like it, stick around, it's bound to change. Guys, our weather is today, let me count it up, I think it's 40-something degrees colder today than it just was a few days ago. And life really does change like the weather. I think maybe that might be the great message of our Creator about life, is that life changes like the weather. Lucy, thank you for being on the show today. It's been such a treat. I just love talking about this stuff. You're such a bright inspiration, from the brightness of your heart to the brightness of that really red hair you've got. You guys got to watch this on YouTube. She's got a whole head of red hair there like I've never seen. It's been great fun. UT Ballers, join us next time. Have a great day. Go back and listen to the episode and share it out to others. And if you have time, give us a 5-star like. It really helps push out the content. All the best, everybody. Bye-bye now.
Welcome to On the Couch and Off Our Rocker with Dr. Ima Freudknot, where we review our special guest's Therapy Bites Art Lab episode, Psycho Malarkey Scale Assessment Results. That's PMS for short.
Lucy Quigley's PMS performance places her in the 92nd percentile on the PMS's RRS, Resilience Rebound Scale. This indicates a remarkably respectable degree of adaptability in Lucy Quigley's cortical crevices and a terrifying tendency toward triumphing over tribulations. Overall, Lucy Quigley's PMS's psychosillimetric assessment results present a picture of an individual shockingly prone to bouncing back from the bottom of life's barrel, but who tames these torrential, implicit, tumultuous impulses by harnessing her unique MyFab5 journaling practice. This phoenix-like soul likely has a transformative prognosis of inspiring others in the near future until these gravely gritty features of her psyche have been psychomologically analyzed and exercised. It is my considered conclusion that Lucy Quigley be prescribed no less than 120 milligrams IS intracellular dose of resilience rhizium, or a 2300 milligram IL intralife dose of grit and grindazole to curtail the chaos of life's roller coaster. Dr. Ima Freudnot, Chief Shrinkstigator, Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Grab some of this episode's guest merchandise, specially designed to help keep this episode's message top of mind in your life. Don't forget friends and family members who could use an Art Lab mental boost too. Just go to therapybites.myshopify.com.
Hey, T-Ballers. Thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team.
Government legal gobbledygook. Not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by... Someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, endorsed, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. SOAP Police, for short. Warning! Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming beliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
Yeah, with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead, don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.